You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
Welcome back, Hour 3 of the Paul Feinbaum Show. Maybe a Paul Feinbaum Show is the better nomenclature to use there.
A, as in singular, as in they'll probably only let us do this once. headlines. Who doesn't love headlines? Could the SEC stage its own college football playoff? No, this is not just the fever dream of, say, a Paul Feinbaum caller or your average SEC fan. This is a very, very real possibility. One among 40, cited by Greg Sankey, as how this league might package its postseason.
Yeah, I think when you add two teams, Texas and Oklahoma, and you break yourself out of the 14-team, two-division race to a conference championship that we've been doing for about 30 years. Remember, this is not ancient. We haven't been doing this since the 40s. Mm-hmm. We've only been doing it since like the early 1990s. I think when you add those two teams, you break yourself out of that structure, you allow yourselves unlimited possibilities. And like you said, this is just one of 40.
Just one.
They're talking about a whole lot of different things. What I think is interesting here is twofold. One is, I think the potential to have every league basically determine their champion however the heck they want to, that is very curious to me. You'll have someone like the Pac-12 who may break out divisions, but they've already said that they're just going to use the two teams that have the best winning percentage. And maybe the SEC, maybe the SEC does something like this playoff model that's only being preliminary floated. Don't freak out.
Don't freak out with any of this. That's just a rule. Don't freak out.
But what I actually also look forward to is a potential future where the college football playoff does expand, but expands into something that's akin to the Champions League over in Europe,
which is
when your conference in a conference race that encompasses everybody and isn't just two stacked divisions playing to have one, you know, good division face the other weak division in the conference championship game, where it's Ohio State versus whoever and they're just food. Play a more competitive conference championship game. And use the conference championship game as an on-ramp to the college football playoff, and have the college football playoff be its own sort of Champions League and its own thing. Yes, that's going to force Notre Dame into a conference. If they were to actually do it, get over it, Notre Dame, join the ACC. But I do like it in theory, and it gets us closer to the Champions League concept, which I just think is interesting. And if we're going to have a college football playoff, have it be a playoff. Play into it.
That's my favorite running gag. Notre Dame, we know you and the ACC are dating. We know it. We know it. Okay? Just go ahead and admit it. Also in the headlines, by the way, Jimbo Fisher, you know, he said something about Nick Saban, came out, had a little press conference at 10:30 a.m. on a Thursday, I believe. You think he'd let that go? You'd be wrong.
Because it was written on social media and it started with the Bro Bible sliced bread deal.
Right.
So everybody believed it. Nick, all the people obviously believed it. I went and checked with our compliance people because we have nothing to do with it. One guy.
Of the 11?
Yes.
The early enrollees.
Yeah. Of the early enrollees.
Gotcha. So that said, what is all this dust up about then?
Great point.
I've just got to ask you, were you shocked that this came up? Because you just told me you only had one.
I said that about a while ago. It's like, that's why I made the original one back in February when they said we had $35 million in the thing. That's all false. It was written on social media, so everybody believes it. And you got news channels believing it, big people believing it, and you believed it.
Well, and Nick Saban believed it, obviously.
Well, he's not news. You're news. You're media. Do you guys not research?
But
I'm asking you, did you do your research?
No.
So you can't answer. So you just assumed. And that's the way this world goes now. As soon as it's written on social media and someone says it, you believe it. So where does that put you as guys as reporters?
where does that put coaches like Nick Saban, who know better, if that's the case?
Where does that put reporters at?
So you're defending Nick Saban?
No, I'm just crazy. I'm asking you guys to put it out in the media. Just hold on. I ain't getting into this.
No. I understand, but I just wanted. Is this change?
It's because social media and media put it out. I got it.
Mm-hmm.
Does you believe it? You just asked me.
Sure. Does that change anything?
What's it change? Nothing's just changed in the beginning.
Truth.
What's the truth? Nobody wants the truth. You want a story and a click and a hit.
Jimbo.
Yeah, man.
Jimbo said, you want to do more of this one-to-one, me and Nick?
Yeah.
Nah, I'm going to swerve. Mm-mm. I'm going to take it to a media criticism. I'm going to say, did you do your own research?
Yeah.
I'm going to avoid a fine by pointing it on you, Savvy.
Not talking about Nick. Talking about the media.
The more I listen to it, to it, Savvy play, Mr. Fisher.
I bet his quarterbacks hear that a lot.
Oh, we're going back to the calls. Greg from Alabama.
Hey, Greg. Guys, thanks for taking my call.
How are we doing, Greg?
I'm good. How are you?
We're doing well.
Not bad. What's on your mind?
I've not read the transcript of what Coach Saban said, but in listening to what you guys have read today and I've heard, I never heard the words illegal or improper when he discussed what Texas A&M or Jackson State did. So NIL is all above board according to what the NCAA has said about this. So where's all this, the dust up about? I mean, it's kind of obvious, you know, that something's going on. When you look at the last 4 years at A&M, they've only signed five stars. And this year, after NIL, they signed seven and have the highest rated class of all time. But where was the words illegal or improper ever used in discussing this?
Greg, thanks for your call. I can go ahead and read it back because I'm fond of reading the transcript, letting everyone else hear. This is are his comments in full regarding purchasing players. We were second in recruiting last year. A&M was first. Saban said A&M bought every player on their team, made a deal for name, image, and likeness. We didn't buy one player, but I don't know if we will be able to sustain that in the future because more and more people are doing it. Greg, the word illegal or improper doesn't appear there. It doesn't. This is more of a rallying cry.
Right,
and I think there's a good point in here. Jimbo Fisher, he's upset because he believes it is implied, and I don't think I'm stretching here, implied, he said it himself, it's implied that he's cheating. And that's the one thing I don't get from Jimbo, okay? There's a lot of reasons you might say this. And this is all above board. Like, if that were the case, now he says it wasn't the case, right? So maybe he's upset with the inaccuracy. But it's all there. It's all there. We have NIL. It's fine. I don't know if you have to be this offended by it, right? Or if he just wanted to blow off steam. I don't know. You're a coach. It's your mic. Take it.
I mean, as far as I understand, Jimbo woke up on Thursday morning or Friday morning and just chose violence.
Let's emphasize this, by the way, right? Not a coordinated thing. He just wanted to do this.
Yeah, he wanted to respond. Yes, Jimbo has some base that he is playing to. Obviously, he was talking to the local media at the time. It was an impromptu press conference. Had some things to say to get off of his chest. And boy, howdy, did he get them off his chest. Larry from Shelby, Alabama, you're on the Paul Feinbaum Show.
Yeah, man, Jimbo's lost it, man. State Spire said Simon was telling the truth. So what the deal? But I tell you what's wrong with Fisher. He goes to bed at night and he sees this little haze above his bed with Nick Saban's face. He said, Jimbo, we're going to kick y'all's ass. He is having nightmares about Nick Saban, brother. I mean, that guy's going off like a crazy person.
Larry, Larry, remember, Texas A&M beat Alabama last year, my friend.
I know that, and he knows redemption's coming, brother. I whooped a guy one time, and I didn't ever want to see him again because that was a tough fight. You know, I knew he could kick my ass if we fought it in, and I avoided him, you know. But,
Larry,
I mean,
Larry,
I
did you see him again?
Going way, Did what?
Did you see him again?
Hell no. I run that guy, man. I knew he was just... I knew he was lying. I made him cheated pretty good. Hell no. I didn't want no part of him, but no more. That's the same way with Jimbo Fisher. He don't want none of saving. He knows it. And he's bothering him, man. Something bothering that guy. I don't know what it is, man. But it's something, smoking something or something. I don't know.
Larry, we appreciate it. Yeah, sell high. Larry is team sell high, and I appreciate that.
Larry, by the way, I appreciate you cutting Larry out before he admitted another crime on the air. That's very important.
He
won. I don't know if it's consensual, but you know, like when you punch somebody, I wouldn't admit that in public. No, you gotta catch me on film.
More Paul Feinbaum Show when we come back from the break. Keith Marshall, former Georgia running back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Spencer Hall,
mm-hmm.
Georgia legend, coming up on the show?
Yeah, you know what? We'll call him a legend.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Keith Marshall. We're going to go ahead and welcome him in. Keith, I wanted to go ahead and first just say that you're sitting here with two Florida Gators. You talk it. Go ahead.
You earned it. You got it.
Talk your mess. Go ahead.
I think we have a good track record the last few years, man.
yeah, you see, he's quick in and out. That's it. That's all he needed. Keith, you know, you're obviously a former college athlete, but now you're in the NIL space. Can you tell us a little bit about the work that you're doing?
Absolutely. First and foremost, obviously, I appreciate you all having me on today. So me and a couple of my former teammates, we founded the Players Lounge back in November. And essentially what it is a Web3 NIL platform that allows these college athletes a way to monetize their brand. And then on the backside, it provides a new level of engagement for fans. So, you know, how it works is the fans, they purchase our NFTs with a smart contract, which basically serves as their ticket or their subscription to enter the community. Once they get in, 50% of the profits from that sale goes to the student athletes. And in return, the athletes engage with the fans an hour a month over the course of the year. So it's really a fulsome model. It allows, like I said, the fans to get, you know, up and close experience with these athletes in a way that compensates the athletes, which we're all excited about.
Keith, as a former college athlete yourself, what were some of the things that you would say were kind of broken about how athletes and fans interacted?
You know, I don't know that anything was broken about him. And I think there were certain rules in place, you know, obviously not allowing college athletes to get paid. So there was a certain level of, if you say, interaction that went through third-party media houses. A lot of times those media houses, in my opinion, curated a certain voice for those athletes and painted the athletes in a certain light. And I think now, because of NIL, because of Web3 and kind of the whole athlete empowerment movement, athletes have the ability to kind of take their own brand and image and portray themselves the way that they want to. So I would say that this is just a progression. I don't want to necessarily point fingers and say the way that things were done in the past were, you know, not sufficient for those times.
For any of the athletes that you are working with right now, one, have any of them said anything about regulation? I'm just asking that because according to Ross Dellinger, there are at least two athletes he's talked to who said, yeah, sure. But then he said most of them definitely don't care about it. And then the second thing I wanted to ask was, what are some of the potential pitfalls? Like when you're talking about, okay, you have money now. What do you do to sort of say, here's how you need to, you know, take care of it? AKA, pay your taxes. Pay your taxes. I made that mistake.
Absolutely.
We all have.
Absolutely. Yeah, so I mean... Yeah. So, I mean, to answer your first question, I think athletes are certainly being cautious, and a lot of them are wanting to make sure that they operate within the rules. But I think the reality of it is right now it's the Wild Wild West. I mean, they say you can get paid your market value. And as we know, market value is completely subjective. So I don't think that there's, you know, too many guidelines for them to work within right now. I think those will start to be put in place over time as all parties involved in this new space figure out, you know, exactly how to navigate it. And then what was your second question? One more time, I lost. Sometimes I get.
What are you doing when you talk to athletes? Like, what are some of the pitfalls that they have of, mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to say prosperity because in some senses, you know, these are very mm-hmm. like realistic sums of money to like normal people. Yeah. But what are you talking about with them in terms of, okay, now you've got a little bit of cash. Here's what we're going to do with it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So that's interesting that you asked that. Actually, the thing that I'm most excited about the platform that we're building I'm sorry, at Georgia, we had like 15 student athletes on our first launch, and if we got 14 or so schools signed up now. So if we expand that, we have a large base of athletes and a large base of fans. I think there's a real opportunity to provide these athletes, you know, value outside of just a paycheck. And what I mean by that is, you know, put infrastructure in place that allows them to get in contact with financial resources and people that can make sure they're making smart decisions with their money to make sure they understand the implications of getting this money now, what that can mean for them long term. And then I think there is a lot of structure around, you know, making sure that they're paying their taxes, making sure that from a contractual standpoint, everything is where it needs to be. The one thing that I have seen, I've made sure to kind of point this out to certain athletes, is I do think that they need legal representation to look over these contracts. You know, I'm new in business myself. I've only been doing it for 5 to 6 years, and I've gotten caught up with contracts where I didn't understand the implications of what I was signing my name on. So I think that's super important to protect the athletes there.
NIL, obviously a big buzzword, but so is NFTs, non-fungible tokens, and the Bitcoin and cryptocurrency and that whole sort of section of personal finance right now. How did you kind of get up to speed on all that sort of stuff and all that world as you kind of got going with this project?
Absolutely. So, you know, I was a finance major in undergrad, so I had a pretty good understanding of finance more broadly. And then I just graduated from Emory and got an MBA there a couple of weeks ago. And so I did a lot of my studying on digital assets and frontier assets. And so I was up to speed pretty much with the more digital asset movement. If you talk about DeFi and, you know, the how they're using the blockchain now to kind of facilitate more transactions, things that way. And obviously the NFT is just one use case of that. So I was fairly familiar with it from a conceptual standpoint, but obviously I didn't get my hands dirty until this project. And, you know, I've learned a lot in the last 6 months for sure.
I think it's really interesting you start talking about all these different Web3 platforms and all this kind of stuff, and you mentioned smart contracts and how those play into to your platform. Is this just a very interesting use case of smart contracts that sort of is beyond kind of like Ethereum or something tied to a cryptocurrency itself?
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Yeah, I mean, I think a smart contract is very broad. It's just like a, you know, a legal contract. Now you can pretty much write into it the functioning that you want. And what's smart about it is obviously it governs itself and executes according to whatever you write in the contract. So I do think that NFT is a very, very broad statement. And when most people hear NFT, they think about, you know, Bored Ape, Crypto Kitties, you know, CryptoPunk, some of the more prominent NFT projects that it's all about speculation. But I think this technology allows us to do things that we were traditionally doing in new and more efficient ways. And I think what we're doing is just one way of doing that.
Keith, I wanted to ask, when you were, I'm going to take you back in time a little bit, when you were an undergrad at the University of Georgia, who would have been scouting you as a prime target for name, image, and likeness, a product that got you through undergrad, something where they were like, Keith Marshall, that's our dude.
Two brands for sure. Cookout, I'm a North Carolina kid, so that was big growing up. I would have tried to get, I would have tried to get a Cookout sponsorship. And then Krispy Kreme is my baby. I had to get a dozen every week, so I would have tried to get a deal there as well.
A dozen every week when you played?
Yeah, I did when I played. I had to kind of back off that now that I'm not playing anymore. But yes, I used to love the Krispy Kreme.
Were you sharing with Todd or anything like that, or is it just you housing a whole dozen?
Yeah, no, you know how it is in college. You come in, you leave it in the dorm room, and by the time you open it, you know, only two or three are left. So the roommates definitely got the benefit off of that as well.
We won't tell Coach Rick, we promise.
Nope.
Keith Marshall has joined us. Keith, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Fellas, I appreciate you all having me on. Y'all have a good day.
Thanks, Keith.
You buying a Keith Marshall NFT?
No.
Why not?
You know why?
Why?
Need to negotiate that. Need to read the contract first. I'm going to follow the man's advice before I engage in anything. Have my attorney look over it.
And that of course. Mm-hmm. No financial advice from Keith Marshall. He's just talking about his product. He's talking about his thing.
That's not an expert.
No,
not an expert. No. I am fascinated by the range of things that you can get endorsed for as a college athlete, right? I've said this many times, but DeJuan Jones of Ohio State, he still has my favorite because he's got the scented candle endorsement. It's a big man, big Thanos, pushing scented candles.
What's your favorite scent? What's your go-to scent?
My go-to scent, Woody. Woody, so something in the sort of sandalwood, woody kind of. Okay. Yeah. What about you?
Highfalutin. I like, there's a Japanese cherry blossom candle that you can get. It smells like the Bath and Body Works lotion scent, Japanese cherry blossom. Don't sleep on it. And also the woodwick candles that burn and sort of crack as they burn on the way down. Our producer in our ears.
Yeah. You know what you can do? You can put on a candle, take a break, enjoy the quiet, and come back for more calls on the Paul Feinbaum Show with me and Richard.
Seamless transition.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's HIMS.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. HIMS.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
I'm Spencer Hall. This is Richard Johnson. We're talking NIL. We're talking player money. We're talking Jimbo and Nick. And we did mention scented candles briefly.
We're Renaissance men. Sorry.
Yeah, we're doing it all.
Not to say that Paul isn't. We're just, you know, maintaining. Keeping the standard up.
Exactly. This is a big bar. Okay? A high bar.
We've had a little bit of Miami-Alabama banter today on the show. And we're going to have a little bit of more of it. Mel from Florida, you're on the Paul Feinbaum Show.
Hi, guys. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday to you.
You sound like you guys are having fun.
We got to, man. Got to.
I mean, you called in. Well, we're ready.
This beat's working.
Thanks for sitting in for Paul. I just want to address this to JK, the Bama hater. Look, JK, we all know that you hate Alabama, and you claim it's because they have such a weenie schedule every year that they don't play anybody. Well, I checked into that, and in the last 10 years, their strength of schedule at the end of the season, the lowest strength of the schedule they had was number 7. They did that twice. They did it. They had the hardest twice, and the others were 2, 3, 6. So we know that you just made that up. It's just because you're envious of Alabama. Your team hasn't been relevant for, 25, 30 years, and so just admit that you hate Alabama because they're good and not because they don't play anybody, because they do.
Mel, thank you for the call. So, okay, help me get my mind around this.
Yeah.
Mel from Florida.
Yes.
Is talking about Alabama and Miami shade.
Yes.
JK from Alabama is talking about Miami, Alabama. It's a lot of.
Yeah.
We're piecing it together today. I don't know what to tell you. Keith from Georgia on the College Football Champions League.
Oh, all right. Hey, guys. How you doing?
How are you doing, Keith?
All right, about you?
Pretty good. Spencer, yeah, I follow you on Twitter, man, and I got to say, I'm with you on the fever dream. as far as like getting the Premier League for like college football.
Yes, sir.
But check this out. I'll take it off air. It's like, say if like the SEC got the Sun Belt, ACC, American, Big Ten. You see where I'm going with the Pac-12, Mountain West. And just open it up and just open up the money and just have these feeder leagues. I'll take it off air. Appreciate you guys.
So what Keith is talking about is talking about if we had a system where your performance determined whether you stayed in the league, right? So
and then had a league under that,
which is kind of how the English Premier League works. Not to mix too much soccer into our fine bomb, but they have a really cool system in terms of if a team is underperforming, they drop to a lower league.
Yeah, basically, right? If you come in the bottom three of the Premier League, you drop into the second tier league, and then you have to play your way back up. Now, right. I think that one problem that a lot of people say about trying to do this in America is what do you do with the revenue? But I also think that ignores the fact that over in England, they do have this thing called parachute payments. Mm-hmm. When you go down, it's not this purely egalitarian system here. You don't go down without anything of a buffer to soften the blow because, of course, when you're in the Premier League, there's an amount of television money that is just unable to tap into if you're in the second tier.
Right, and you can get back. You can get back. So just a hypothetical, I'm just going to pick a team. Let's say Alabama has the worst turnaround in program history. They go from like 13-0 to 0-13, you know, or 0-12. So let's say you go 0-12, okay, and the entire state of Alabama is, you know, in uproar, and you fall down to the Sun Belt. You can come back up. That's entirely possible if you win the league. Okay. Now you see, you go, oh man, that would be terrible for my team. True. It'd be very funny for me personally if your team, who I didn't like, went down. You can see why this is so compelling.
What is that line, that old line? Tragedy is when it happens to me, comedy is when it happens to you, something like that?
Remember, tragedy is me when I cut my finger, comedy is when you fall into an open sewer. Like that. That is very much at the heart. It's a little mean. It's a little dramatic. A little dramatic? It's a lot dramatic. So I kind of want this for college football. We're taking line three next.
We are. Miami fans. Vass from Orlando. Is this Coach Vass?
Is this Coach Vass?
This is Coach Vass.
My man. Coach.
What's on your heart?
I got a question for you. How many years of unfettered NIL shenanigans will it take for the U to compete with the top echelon of the SEC?
Oh, you got some work to do, Vass. You may have to kick into the kitty, my friend.
Yeah.
Because, like, yeah, we talked about this earlier in the show. It's not just about one good recruiting class, right? You have to stack those recruiting classes up. I'm not going to say anybody can have one. But for purposes of this exercise, anybody can have one. But can you parlay that into multiple years of top three recruiting classes? Look at what Georgia, Ohio State, Alabama, Clemson, that tier of the sport have done, stacking recruiting classes together. That helps with attrition. That helps with depth. That lets you also take swings and take risks on guys. And if they don't pan out, it's okay, right? Jordan Davis was a three-star.
Yep.
Let's say Jordan Davis doesn't work out if he went to a different program, right? And I know that's hard to get your mind around.
That is the biggest, like, diamond in the rough ever.
Yeah.
And I mean literally the biggest diamond rough.
I know it's hard to get your mind around, but if you're a different team and you take a swing on Jordan Davis and he doesn't work out, well, maybe you're set back a little bit with your defensive line development or your entire defensive line entirely. Georgia takes a swing. He clearly works out, and he simply raises the level of otherwise insanely talented defenders and highly rated defenders around him.
Yeah, but Vass wants an answer. 4 years. 4 years. You need four full classes. I'm just going to go ahead and say that, right? That's the reasonable answer. The irrational answer for the fan is this. You should be competitive immediately. Immediately. That's right. Demand more.
Do you think Mario Cristobal speeds that timeline up? Like, if I asked you this question a year ago, does Mario Cristobal being in the chair now, does that change the timeline for you?
No. It doesn't, because this. Great programs are built from the ground up, and I mean from booster, school, everything. Everybody's got to be on board, and everybody's got to be committed in order to be at the top.
But that's been Miami's problem for like ever.
Right. So Mario Cristobal doesn't have a whole lot to do with that. He's a finisher. He's going to help get him across the line. But institutionally, they've got to be committed.
Dan Radakovich, new athletic director. Plenty of NIL smoke outside for Miami and a new head coach. There are things to be optimistic about with the Canes. But remember, they play Texas A&M early in the season. And you want to talk about an early prove-it game on the college football schedule? That's the big one.
Yeah, how do you think that's going to go?
We'll talk about that later in the offseason. Not right now. Not right now. Too early.
All right. We're going to go ahead and wrap up, take this to break. We will be right back with a special guest and Mr. more of your calls here on the Paul Feinbaum Show.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We roll on the Paul Feinbaum Show on this illustrious Monday afternoon. We're taking your call, Spencer.
Hey, can you get Bomani in New York?
Yeah, Bomani in New York. You're on the Paul Feinbaum Show.
What's going on?
Well,
look at that.
That sounds like somebody we know.
How we doing, sir?
Yeah. I mean, it just seemed like a good place to come if anybody wanted to laugh at Texas A&M. I feel like I'm in the right place for that. Am I right?
See, you took the words right out of my mouth. As a gentleman who is very familiar with that particular part of Texas and the Texas A&M program in and of itself, what do you make of the last 72 or so hours?
Don't nobody want to go to College Station for free. I just did not realize that was a controversial thought. I didn't get there. And I understand, Jimbo, you the player whisperer, right? You want to feel like you the guy that can convince people to do anything. But when you were convincing them to come to Tallahassee, fam, you was up the street, baby. Only thing up the street from College Station is Bryant. That's it. Proximity to the Bluebell Creamery just doesn't land in that same way. Man, I didn't realize how much he didn't like Nick Saban. That is really the thing that I learned in this. He really doesn't like Nick Saban. I misunderstood.
Yeah, by the way, proximity to the Bluebell Creamery, I think we're underrating it. I'm not saying that it has the same attractions that other schools do, but Bluebell's super important.
I ain't gonna lie. I've been out of Texas now for so long that maybe I've forgotten how much the proximity matters, because it probably does land even better over there. Oh, my goodness. Like, I just can't. Like, there's just some things I'm not arguing with people about, man. And no matter how fancy your ice cream is, it ain't got nothing on no Bluebell.
But, money, with Saban, as far as Saban is concerned, do you think he kind of stepped in it here, or how do you read Saban's kind of initial punch and then, you know, the walk back on Friday?
No, he didn't lose anything, because I think what gets lost in college sports stuff, and I notice this more in, like, catastrophic situations, but all politics are local. I don't get the feeling that the locals have any problem with it. I bet they was passing the hat to try to figure out how to get their collective cracking after he said that. So as long as he's good there and he's good with the players, then who's the audience that actually matters? Like, the worst thing to happen with college football being treated like a national sport is that we think other people's opinions matter. Like, you remember when we was about to fire Urban Meyer from Ohio State, and we had good reason to fire him from Ohio State, but Ohio State was like, nah, we're good. And it just went away.
Yeah, that's very true.
Very, very much, by the way, in line on this. Did we just add a line to coaches' responsibilities in terms of coaching on the field, hiring a staff, recruiting, and now additionally building a small marketing business? That seems to be the implication I get here from let's be better at NIL.
Yeah, I think the funniest part about this is none of these businesses actually care about how this is going to help their business, right? Right. So the best part about this is everybody's just figured out how to write off making their football team better. That's all it comes down to. Because, like, when this first came out, what was it, the big boy from Ohio State that was doing the artisanal candles?
Yes, like, DeJuan Jones.
That was bringing attention to something that was going there. Jordan Davis on the billboard in Atlanta for the big law firm. Okay, overall, I can see that. Ain't none of these businesses getting no money off of putting these kids nobody's heard of and no damn commercials.
You know, we all hear numbers. We all hear, $8 million for one quarterback and seven-figure deal for this quarterback. What, as an economist, something of an economist yourself, what do you make of this market or lack thereof, I guess you could say?
Well, I want to see what the market looks like in 2 years, because when I saw that story about the basketball players at Miami where one of them was getting like 800 G's and the other one wanted more and I'd never heard of either one of them, I was like, hey, okay, we're not even talking about Miami football here. We're talking about Miami basketball. But what happened with Miami was all those boosters, I mean, a lot of the boosters, and I don't even know how many of them were boosters before, but they hit for big crypto scores. And so a lot of this is that excess money that was in the economy they had nothing else to do with this crypto. But now that this crypto money is falling apart, I'm not exactly sure. Like, some of these schools that are doing this, they're going to be able to do it now. I don't know how long they're actually going to be able to keep up the payroll, because the revenue isn't tied to actual winning, right? It's tied to all these other factors. That's the other part that makes this fun. How much money you have to spend on this has absolutely nothing to do with how good the team actually is.
You talk about crypto sort of losing its steam, obviously. You know, we've been in a bull market for God knows how long with the stock market and regular sort of more traditional avenues of finance. Let's say the stock market tanks tomorrow and we head headlong into another recession. Like, what do you think that does to the college football recruiting infrastructure?
Ooh. I mean, it's going to do exactly what one would expect under these circumstances, because I don't know how many of these people given this money are actually rich, right? Like, I feel like, I mean, there's always that top tier of booster that's super rich, but they want something they can put their name on. They try to put their name on a building or something like that, right? You're going to rename a fountain after them or something. I don't know how much they're getting into the actual, like, nitty-gritty paying players thing. The other thing that I wonder about in it is, so, like, I live in New York, and New York has legalized marijuana. And from what I've been told, people making their purchases, they enjoyed the sleight of hand of, like, pretending like they were giving a handshake and there was money in it and taking a bag that has no markings on it. Like, they like the excitement of it. I don't feel like this can be nearly as much fun for boosters as it was going into bars and meeting shady people and then, you know, handing the food line bag over. I just feel like that had to be a much more gratifying experience than this.
Listen, you just got SMU flashbacks running through my head now, because, yeah, it was cool building a football team. But I think one of the things that those boosters seem to enjoy most, all right, SMU's boosters specifically here I am talking about factually. One of the things they seem to enjoy most was getting one over, right? They enjoyed the hustle.
I mean, and quietly, has any school historically enjoyed it more than SMU?
No.
Like, when you go look at how many times have you been on probation, SMU's ratio of probation to success is them and Mississippi State. It's like, damn, I wish y'all were a little better at this, because y'all damn sure be trying.
I believe you and mutual friend Holly Anderson had a conversation, and you brought something up that I hadn't even really considered. If you're in the fundraising department of some of these schools, how are you looking sideways at the NIL stuff, potentially siphoning off some of the money?
Yo, I had not thought about that until Holly brought it up. It was Alan Kinney who brought it up, Crimson and Cream Machine, but he's like, look, the schools are at odds with the boosters because the boosters are now giving the money straight to the players rather than giving this to the actual institutions themselves. Now, of course, the institutions could fix all of this just by paying their workers. That's all they got to do. The solution to this is very, very simple. They don't want to do that, though, and so now they're going to wind up losing out on this money. Because I also think that I'd be curious to know the age breakdown on some of this, because I feel like what you're getting also is probably the new generation of boosters, younger folks, because you can't get any clout on campus because you don't have, like, building money. But you can get some clout in the personnel game, and what all these guys want is clout. They want respect. They want to be known when they walk into rooms. And so maybe that's what we wind up with, is that the little money gets the players and the big money builds the stadium.
Yeah, this is more of a comment than a question, Bo, but one of the deals with Florida, at least in the 2000s, was this, that success brought new boosters. And those new boosters were newer money and younger. Guess what those people are? Deeply impatient, right? They are like fan impatient, right? Old money been there for a while, got their name on the stadium. Like, well, I don't know. Let's give this guy a couple more seasons. New money hit, and suddenly it was like three seasons? Yeah. Fired. Done.
Well, that's the interesting thing about Texas, right, is that for all the money is all old, and they're actually remarkably patient. When you really go back and look at it, they're pretty patient unless you push back against a stupid little song. Mm-hmm. But they'll generally give you some time to work it out, and that's even with a zillion of those guys who don't agree about anything. But the youngsters are like, yo, it's supposed to turn around right now. I put this in the microwave, dog.
We had Ross.
The microwave burrito school of program building. We had
Ross Dellinger of Sports Illustrated on the show earlier, and he was talking about the class of program who's doing this NIL stuff, and it's the Miamis, right? It's the 80s and 90s success, haven't had much success in the last 10, 15 years, and want to get back to it. What do you make of those types of programs really making hay here and making a lot of noise?
Well, I think the way we view them is kind of interesting because Miami is a nouveau riche program, except the nouveau started 40 years ago. Like, it's easy to forget how long ago all that stuff was because it didn't feel old-timey, right? And so there are going to be people, like, I wonder how this goes for Nebraska fans. I don't know if they're, doing enough farming and ranching to get the money up in order to make this happen, but I would imagine that they would be the first ones trying to figure out how to make this get back to what it was. They'll never be able to. Miami, though, and this is the question I had, they could put that money in those kids' pockets, and that's fine, but everything I've understood about Miami is you need to put the money in these facilities. Like, their problem is when they actually walk around and start looking at your stuff.
Yeah. Bo, from New York, thank you for calling in. That was a great call. Have a great day.
Please tell Paul I said hello the next time he's here. I feel like we have beef that shouldn't even be beef. We could probably fix that.
That is correct. I agree.
We will solve the beef. We will Jay Prince we will solve the beef.
I mean, how could I not like somebody from Memphis? You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. Memphis's finest in so many different ways. That was Bomani Jones. I'm Spencer Hall. This is Richard Johnson. We are cartwheeling into the 6 o'clock hour of the Paul Feinbaum Show. Join us for calls shortly after this break.